I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly Magazine.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. Today, we're going to give you our year-end special episode. We're going to talk over all of our food favorites from 2015. So let's jump right in.
All right.
We created this episode just by having a shared brainstorming document of all of the things that we loved. Some of them are yours or mine, and some of them are both shared. The first thing I wrote down, and I mean, these are in no particular order, but this year I fell hard for La Devisa meats, pâtés, and sausages in the Reading Terminal Market. Have you had those?
I have. They're so good.
Wonderful. I mean, what a special dinner if you have just some pickles, some of that pâté, a nice loaf of bread. Or he has many different different sausages. Yeah. That, like, just with some – over the summer, I was cooking them up with potato salad.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Just as the simplest little dinner. It's just delicious. And every time I go there, I pick something up, and it's always been too long since I was last there.
Yeah, it has definitely been too long since I've gotten anything there. It's all delicious.
Let's take turns. Now you name something.
Okay. Well, as far as restaurants and other people making delicious food, I think for me, the best meal I had all year was at Abe Fisher. We went there for my...
That's a shared favorite.
Yes. We went there for my birthday, and it was so good. And oddly enough, we happened to be there the night that they were filming some TV show. I think it was... I don't even remember which one. But so months later, the episode aired, and someone tweeted at us that, hey, we saw you guys at Abe Fisher on TV.
Wow.
And
that's
it was so funny. But no, the meal was terrific. I keep wanting to go back. And oh, God.
Do you have any special favorite dishes?
It's been a long time now, so I don't. But
I really liked everything I had there, but one dish stands out, and it is the veal schnitzel tacos.
Yes, that I was actually thinking the tacos. Were so good.
They make the tortillas fresh there. You know, they share part or more than part of a kitchen with Diesengolf, where they bake all those great fresh pitas,
which is also an amazing place.
And the tortillas are equally delicious as those pitas, and they really, I think, take that dish to another level. Okay. Also, we're gonna stick here to restaurants for a bit and prepared stuff. I am so excited to have South Philly Barbacoa open in a storefront in a 10 minute walk from my house.
I'm very jealous.
The tacos themselves are incredibly tender and delicious. And sort of the unsung star of the program over there is this consomme, this lamb consomme that is made from the bones and the juices of the meat as it cooks. And then it has rice in it and just deliciously creamy chickpeas. And it's
so
therapeutic and delicious and soul warming. Have you been there yet?
I haven't. But I've been hearing you talk about it for years. You know, Philadelphia, it's such a city of neighborhoods that sometimes you forget to go outside of your own neighborhood.
They have had the cart going for a while, but it's, I think it has been just this year that they've had the storefront, which makes it so much nicer. We'll have to make a list of places to go. And since it's in South Philly, I'll drag you there for lunch.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Another favorite of mine from this year, and it is one that I've gone outside my neighborhood for, is Stock up in Fishtown. And it is just a delicious Vietnamese restaurant, but sort of elevated. So they make different pho's, but making all of their own stocks in-house and using really good ingredients. And
that's the part of it that I like. Yeah. There's no worries about the origins of those.
And, you know, it's like you can get some really great different noodle soups in this area, but, you know, in Chinatown or South Philly, but you're not going to know what went into them.
Right.
And so you just have to pretend.
Have you ever had their sandwiches there?
I have.
I've heard the banh mi is killer.
My God, they're so good.
I have had the soup, but not the banh mi.
And they also do like a green papaya salad that's really good. So everything there that I've had has been delicious.
Another favorite of mine is Stargazy, which is the British meat pie and mash spot.
I haven't been there.
Also down here in South Philly.
Food stuff is happening in South
Philly
also,
right now. But also, I don't get out of my neighborhood as much as I should, so I tend to be more up on those things that are right outside my front door. And it's like there's the traditional beef one that they serve it with this – I was going to say weird, but that's not the right word. This unusual green parsley gravy type thing. And it is – really a stick to your ribs kind of food. And definitely everyone has been talking about the meat pies, but he does great vegetarian stuff too. I've had a cauliflower and cheese pie there. It's really hearty, especially as the weather is cold. It's totally worthy of a stop. And so did you have any more restaurants that you wanted to shout out?
Well, you put Old Bar on our list, but I also enjoy that place, particularly because my family had a restaurant. So it's in the old
Bookbinders.
And my family had a restaurant in Philadelphia from 1923 to 1968.
I'm at this moment stunned that I didn't know this about you.
It was called the Russian Inn. And so in the day, Bookbinders and the Russian Inn were sort of like the two biggest restaurants in Philadelphia. So I have this sort of appreciation for the Bookbinders building because it survives and my family's restaurants building did not. And so I love just going there and feeling like this was a place where members of my family probably went. And so I love it for that, but I also love the sort of throwback.
The atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere is great. And the menu's fun too. And the cocktails are good.
Right. I definitely ate there and I think I had fried clams there and maybe oysters and it was delicious, yeah. Perfectly good. The cocktails were very thoughtful and well executed, but it's really the room that I love there. Before we leave the topic of restaurants, I did want to shout out Whetstone.
Yes, which I haven't been to, but I really want to.
It's sort of like – it's from Jeremy Nolan, mm-hmm. who we're going to talk about later in a different category. He has Brauhaus Schmitz on South Street, which is a terrific German beer hall. And this place is not so German. It's more like, I mean, I hesitate to use the words new American, but it's like very straightforward but delicious food. I got to get back there.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So next category up, cookbooks and recipes. Now, Joy, I know that there's one on this list that you are deeply, deeply in love with. Would you care to share?
Is it Ferment Your Vegetables?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking. That's your new love. I was thinking that you are passionate about the crackling chicken thighs from Nom Nom Paleo.
All of this stuff I'm pretty excited about. But it is true that I have a special obsession with the crackling chicken recipe from Nom Nom Paleo. It is on the blog and we'll definitely link to it if I haven't already linked to it. Have you ever made it?
I haven't. I've made some other recipes from that book, but I haven't made those. But
this basically, the situation is that you get skin on boneless chicken thighs, and then you cook them in a cast iron skillet, skin side down, until the skin is shatteringly crisp, which can take, depending on how much heat you're using, like between a half hour and an hour.
Wow.
And then you cook it just briefly on the other side. You let it stand for a couple of minutes, and then you just slice it into like almost chicken finger-like things. It's so crunchy, and I make it pretty salty, and sometimes I do like a honey mustard thing to serve it with, and it almost like recalls the fast food of my childhood or something, but not as bad for you.
God, that sounds so good.
So what about this rye bread?
So the rye bread from Fika, which is a book that came out earlier this year all about the art of the Swedish coffee break, and I loved the book from the moment it arrived on my doorstep. But I had the opportunity a few weeks ago to go to a little gathering that our friend Tania Darlington hosted. She of Madame Fromage, and
I was out of town,
which was very sad. But she invited one of the co-authors of that book, Johanna Kinvald, down from New York to come to this party. So it was sort of a little party for the book. But Johanna brought a suitcase full of bread dough and then these loaves of finished rye bread with her, and it's the recipe from the book, and it's so good. I've made it twice now. And the recipe starts by you boil a kettle of water, you measure out 3 cups of the rye flour, and then you pour the boiling water over the rye flour and you let it sit anywhere from like 6 hours to overnight. So I just do it before I go to bed and the next day make the bread. And it is, they're dried, they're prunes in the dough. So it's like,
I actually love prunes.
It's sweet and dark and you only need a little bit. So I make it and I slice and I put it in the freezer and you can slice it really thin. So it feels indulgent, but you're not eating like giant wads of bread.
I have a couple of questions about this.
Yes.
Is it 100% rye flour?
No, it also has either all purpose or you can use some whole wheat pastry flour.
And that process of letting the the rye soak, is that to hydrate it? Or do you think it's just sort of like do a little sourdough action?
I think it's both. Huh. It is to hydrate it, and then also you get a little more flavor
as it sits.
And so Johanna and I chatted about it. In the recipe in the book, she uses regular old yeast, dry yeast. Mm-hmm. But when she makes it at home, she uses a sourdough starter. So I've been reanimating my sourdough starter in order to try it with the sourdough. But it is just, it's, you know, so many books I feel like go under the radar, but this book is a sleeper hit. And if you have it on your shelf, you should pull it out and make the rye bread.
I'm going to check it out next time I visit you.
Yeah, and, it's really, it's one of my favorites from 2015.
Terrific. Well, one of my favorites is actually by a former Local Mouthful guest, Amanda Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Ferment Your Vegetables.
Which is an amazing, amazing book.
Amazing. A tour de force. Amanda is my hero in this cookbook writing from 2015. She demystifies it and makes it so within your grasp. The results are so delicious. Yeah. I have become a fermenting fiend. And actually, one of the things that I like best about both Amanda's, her blog, her classes, her book, is she really empowers you to, you know, not have to follow the recipe. Yeah. She really helps you have the confidence to use what you have to save, like prevent waste. I mean, yeah. I prevented so much waste in my CSA for fermenting stuff and making pickles. And then the stuff is just so fun to cook with. Like, yeah. Just, I mean, I love it as a snack, but then, you know, I made hot sauce and I saved like some of the liquid. And now I use that kind of like almost like a spicy vinegar.
That's essentially what it is.
Full of inspiration and ideas. I hope Amanda is listening and she knows how grateful that I am that she brought fermentation into my life.
Well, yeah, just to, you know, add a few words. Her recipes are some of the most creative fermentation recipes I have seen out there. And so often authors who are writing fermentation books fall into this trap of giving you too much information so that you don't have a handle to hold on to as you enter a recipe. And she does a great job of making it all clear, but only giving you the information you need in that recipe to make the recipe work.
Right.
And I so appreciate that because as a preserver, I do, you know, I put a lot of things in jars, but I am not as able a fermenter as I am a jam maker or sort of a traditional pickle maker, traditional meaning vinegar. And although fermentation is probably the real traditional pickle, so I don't want anybody to yell at me about that. And so her recipes both allow, give me sort of this very clear structure to sort of enter, but then also empower me to try new things.
And that's really the ticket.
Absolutely.
And why don't we stick to, while we're talking about fermented stuff, tell me more about
Preserving the Japanese Way. Yep. This book is amazing. It is written by a food writer who married a Japanese man, a Japanese farmer, Nancy Singleton, and I'm blanking on her third name, Hachisu. And so this book is aspirational. I am not there yet because it embodies and embraces a whole culture of pickling and preserving that is foreign and fascinating, and the flavors are different. And I feel like it's a book that I will continue to discover new things in for years to come. I'm fascinated with it. It's sort
I've
of like
I've heard her interviewed, yeah. Although I haven't seen the book. It seems really,
and it's huge.
Is it?
It's a huge book. I mean, it has got to be 2 inches thick.
Wow. That sounds like a really exciting one. And have you made anything from it yet or not?
I haven't. Sometimes with books that I'm fascinated by, I just kind of keep opening them and then I circle them. They live on my dining room table for a while. I sort of look at it. I read some recipes, but I can't quite get in yet. Like there's just not the right moment to enter it.
But to borrow a phrase from another popular Japanese author of 2015, it probably sparks joy.
Yes, it does. It does. It is staying on the dining room
which
table.
Which is why we have all of these various things on our list. Well, let's talk about the Zahav book.
Yay! So if you guys don't know, Joy was the recipe editor for the Zahav book. And she did an amazing job.
It's a incredible collection of Michael Solomonoff's modern Israeli food. Much of it is super approachable. All of the – well, I guess I should backtrack to the hummus. The hummus is like what it's all. I mean, yeah. If I have said this a million times, but if you just make the hummus and that becomes part of your life, it's well worth the cost of the book, because it turns out exactly the way it turns out at the restaurant, light and fluffy and satiny smooth. And there's also a recipe in there for pita and laffa, homemade pita and laffa, which also turns out very much like it does at the restaurant, and is just such a delight. There's so many. I learned so much working on these recipes, and I'm really excited to just keep cooking from the book now, forever. Now that I have it on my shelf, it's beautiful. It's it really tells the moving story of Mike's journey to having Zahav. It's co-authored by the equally remarkable and inspiring Steve Cook, who's his business partner, and it's worth reading and having and loving. And yeah. I think it would make, like a lot of the stuff we're talking about today, it's really giftable. Like, I think it would be a nice thing to give a food lover.
Funny story. My cousins, I didn't have a copy, and my cousins at Thanksgiving showed up with Hanukkah presents, and they were like, here, this is for you. And it was a signed copy of the Zahav cookbook.
Did you make anything from it yet?
I haven't, because I left it at my cousin's house. So I need to reclaim it.
Well, we'll talk. I'll try to go over my favorites with you.
I'm really excited. And then one last book from a local author. So Jeremy Nolan's New German Cooking. It came out earlier this year and really changed my perception of German food in a positive way. It's very vegetable-centric, vegetable-heavy. It has a really nice bread section. I've really enjoyed cooking from it. And as someone who grew up sort of believing that German food was heavy and greasy and unappealing, I have had my attitude totally changed.
I also have this book, though I haven't cooked from it yet. I'm a big fan of Jeremy Nolan's food. And they do have, I think, the recipe in that book for my favorite thing from Brauhaus Schmidt, which is the sauerkraut fritters.
I think so, yeah.
Which is not particularly light, or I guess it's vegetable focused,
well,
but
you know,
I do want to make those. Is there anything you have your eye on to make, or that you have made?
I really want to try some of the pretzels.
Oh, pretzels.
You know, because I feel like I'll tackle those in January when bread baking is, there's nothing more appealing than baking bread in January.
Pretzels, I think, are they a little tricky?
I made pretzels once years ago. The only tricky step about them is the boiling process, that you need to boil them briefly. And traditionally, you do it in water that's been treated with lye, which can be toxic. Or you can do it in water that has been treated with baking soda. You don't get quite the same flavor with baking soda, but you're not introducing...
exposing yourself to a chemical.
Yeah. So I've done it with baking soda, and it's worked really well. That's how you get that sort of really dark brown, burnished crust, which is nice.
Well, I think that wraps up our cookbook and recipe favorites of the year. On to tools and gadgets, which you have more favorites than me.
I am such a tool and gadget person. I wish I could be a minimalist, but I'm just not, and I'm okay with
that. Which to me is insane, because I was going to say, I'm a minimalist. I can't have stuff in my kitchen. My kitchen is already overcrowded with stuff, but your kitchen is even smaller than mine. So, like, I just don't – where do you put your stuff?
I have higher ceilings in my kitchen than yours. So, like, there is stuff all the way up to the ceilings. My cabinets have about 18 inches of clearance on top of them. I have these ancient metal fake wood grain cabinets in my kitchen. And on top of them, the whole ceiling is lined with stuff. And then years ago, my dad built some shelves. So I use every inch
of my kitchen. You really have an impressive array of stuff in there.
So
let's talk about your new favorites.
My new favorite gadgets. One of the things that I really like this year, and I use it primarily for canning, which, as you know, is my sort of primary world. My third canning book is coming out in March, so canning is my thing. And it's one of these silicone spill stoppers for preventing boil overs. You know, it's a silicone lid that sits on top of your pot of boiling water. And then it has these little sort of silicone petals in the inside so that you can put it on the pot and it's going to boil. It'll boil into the silicone lid so that it's not going to splash all over your cooktop.
And you use this for processing jars?
I do. I put it on the pot instead of a lid, and it means that you don't get that sort of splashing boil. The lid doesn't rattle, and you can maintain a nice high boil without making a big mess. But it also works beautifully for stock because it allows the steam to escape. It's just one of those tools that I feel like it's more popular in Europe than it is here, but it is one of my favorite things.
Cool.
And so I want to give it a good shout out.
What else you got?
Well, so I have totally been converted to the rice cooker
We did talk fold. About we this did. A little previously.
So the people from Tiger sent me a rice cooker earlier this year, and I was sort of skeptical, and it has become one of my favorite things. Now, I will confess, I don't use it that much for rice, but what I use it for at least twice a week is oatmeal. Because it has, so I like steel cut oatmeal. I eat a lot of oatmeal because it's a good vehicle for jam and fruit butters. And, so it has a timer. So steel cut oats take about an hour to cook. You can set the rice cooker you can set a time saying, I want you to be finished at this point. It has a porridge setting, which I think is charming. And, so I can put the steel cut oats in with the water, some cinnamon, some salt. Tell it when I want it to be done. And it'll just turn on in the early morning, and there is, you know, perfectly cooked steel cut oats. So that kind of has changed my life a little bit. I also use it all the time for whole grains. And I really think that if you're someone who is trying to integrate more whole grains into your life, that a rice cooker can actually be really useful because you can set this timer situation so you could set it up before work, tell it you want it to be done at 7 o'clock. You come home, you make dinner, the rice cooker finishes your grains when, you know, you're ready to eat.
Especially for those slow cooking grains that maybe you don't want to wait around for, especially on a weeknight.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. And so I've cooked millet in it, I've cooked farro, I've cooked barley. And so I know it's called a rice cooker, but I feel like someone would be really smart to rebrand it for the American market, the whole grain cooker.
Huh. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so I have another one. I can keep going.
I only have one, so go ahead.
So another gadget I really like that came out this year is the new OXO immersion blender. OXO for years has done sort of small kitchen utensils. In the last couple of years, they've started to tiptoe into more, like they released a line of cookware. I haven't tried the cookware, but it's beautiful. But they've also now released a line of small electric appliances.
Yeah, I don't think of stuff you plug in when I think of OXO. Yeah.
But so I haven't tried many of their electric appliances. You know, they've got, a fancy line of coffee makers. They have, a toaster and a hand beater. But the one that I've tried is the immersion blender. Now, we have talked about immersion blenders on the show before. I love immersion blenders. I use them for many things, cauliflower puree, pureed soups, fruit butters, jams. To me, there is, if I had to give up all of my other blending apparatus and choose one, I would choose the immersion blender.
What makes this one better than ones you've had in the past?
I really like, first of all, and it's not a function thing so much as a form thing, the way they have included a little clip on the cord. So when you coil the cord around the immersion blender body, you can clip it into place.
Oh, that is nice.
Which it keeps it neat. And I realize that might seem like a fussy little thing, but I've had an immersion blender for the last few years, for the last like 6 or 7 years. And every time I have to sort of tie the cord around it to keep it neat. And the cord has split, like the casing. Mm-hmm. And so this is a far better option. I also just like the fact that it has a light. So
a light?
They have their hand mixer and their immersion blender. They've put a soft light in the head, or in the immersion blenders, it's sort of at that point where the blade connects to the body, to the motor. So it illuminates what you're mixing.
So you can see well what you're doing.
And for me, my stove is sort of dark naturally because the oven is above the stove. So it's always been hard to see what's happening in the pot. And so now I have this immersion blender.
That's really cool.
It's really smart. It's like they actually, you know, and OXO is known for being smart. But to me, this is sort of, it never occurred to me to put a light on the immersion blender. But it, of course, it's so brilliant. So little things like that. And then, I mean, for the rest of it, it functions like every other immersion blender. But the only other thing I like is that the head is coated with sort of a soft, either, I'm not sure what material it's made of, but it doesn't feel like plastic. It feels almost like silicone or something. So that it's not going to scratch the interior of your pot. I've always been very careful. I don't have a lot of nonstick, but I'm always careful not to use an immersion blender in nonstick. And this one I wouldn't worry about.
Interesting.
So thumbs up, OXO.
Well, I'm kind of a underbuyer. I tend to not get the things that I need. And for years, I've been making do with one vegetable peeler, the serrated kind that is not the Y peeler. Does that one have a name? I don't know.
I know what you're talking about. Sort of.
It's like the straight one.
Yeah.
And it's not ideal for, it's good for peeling off certain types of tough skin.
Yeah.
But for most peeling jobs, the Y peeler is better. And I finally got a Y peeler this
year. Good for you.
Now I have the luxury of two vegetable peelers.
Oh, God, Joy, my kitchen must make you insane. I think I have. Well, I mean, I also have equipment for classes. So in my apartment alone, I have something like 15 peelers.
I had one of your peelers for like 6 months and you didn't even notice.
I know, because I have so many peelers.
So that was like a nice treat for myself to have the peeler that I really need.
Do you have any other just favorite gadgets or pieces of gear?
My Vitamix is like means everything to me. I love that. I love that beauty.
I know. I love my Vitamix too.
But I don't really want to like rub it in because it's hard to decide to buy one. They're really expensive.
They are. I will say if you are on the fence about getting a Vitamix and you're looking for a more affordable option, they do have reconditioned ones on their website. That's actually how I bought mine years ago. And so they're still expensive, but they're less expensive. And mine's been serving me now for like 7 years. So it is a good way to go.
Tell me about your favorite blogs and websites from the year.
Well, I have two on the list here that I really have enjoyed, and it's typically for their writing. So I have this, I miss old school blogging, you know, which makes me sound like an old fogey, but blogs have really changed over the last decade. And I've been blogging for the last decade, and I miss how it used to be where people really valued writing. And these are two blogs that to me bring that back. So the first is A Raisin and a Porpoise. It is written by my friend Janet, who I've met, who has fed me wonderful food. She sends me quince in the fall from her trees. But I also think that she is one of the best writers going on the internet. And her blog is just beautiful and gorgeous.
Is it a recipe blog?
She includes recipes, but it is not
recipe-driven.
It is more story-driven, and the recipe happens to be an outgrowth of the story. And she lives in rural Western Massachusetts. They raise sheep. It's beautiful writing, and it's also a glimpse into a life that is different from my own, which
sounds pastoral.
It is. I love it. And it's fun to, and she also does a little preserving. So, you know, we connect on that
like
front.
Mine.
And then the other blog I really like is Cider and Rye, which is not, you wouldn't think it would be a blog for me because it's about cocktails.
I wouldn't think that.
But it is another just beautiful blog, beautifully written, beautiful photography. And I like elements of cocktails. So I'm always interested in syrups, unique infusions, things that can add flavor.
I can see how that would inform your canning creativity.
Yeah. And so this is a blog that does a lot of really creative, thoughtful additions to cocktails. And so for me, it has offered ideas. It's given me inspiration. And for that, I appreciate it.
This one, the only thing I have to add to this might be somewhat lame because I don't think this is news to anyone, nor is it new, but I still love The Kitchen. I still read The Kitchen every day.
I do too. They do really good work over there.
It's not definitely not a blog, but in terms of websites that I visit all the time, it's very high up on my list.
I really agree.
Continues to be one of my favorites.
I also love the Canal House Ladies lunch.
Oh, of course. Do you get their emails, emails?
I don't get the lunch emails, but I subscribe to the feed, so I get it in my feed reader, all of their beautiful lunches.
That's like a fantasy life.
Yeah.
Those two are – maybe they'll come on the – maybe Melissa and Christopher will come on this podcast
one
day.
Oh, we could drive
that's
up
a
and
dream.
Bring the podcast to them.
Oh, you know what? We're going to try to make that happen in 2016. They're probably not listening, but Melissa and Christopher, we're coming for you.
All right. I like it. What about podcasts? What do you listen to?
I listen to a staggering number of podcasts, though I realize most of them aren't food podcasts. Maybe just a small fraction of my podcast diet is food. But something newish this year is And Eat It Too with Molly Gilbert and Sarah Barthelo. I just like their show. It has been compared to our show.
Really?
It's two friends chatting.
Oh, fun.
I think they've actually shouted out some of your specific recipes.
Oh, no.
Like maybe even the tomato jam.
Oh, God, I got to listen.
You do. What they do on that show is they start off with a phrase, like a food phrase. Like I recently listened to one that jumped off of couch potato.
Uh-huh.
And then they kind of just like free associate everything. It's really fun. You should add it to your list. What about you?
Well, as far as food goes, I have this year started listening more actively to Margaret Roach's A Way to Garden, which is about food and gardening and sort of a life, a carefully constructed life, which is always interesting to me. So I really enjoy that. I was a guest on her podcast earlier this year, which was also an honor. And I just really enjoy it. And Margaret Roach, she is someone who used to work for the Martha Stewart empire and then chose to step away and create her own life in a little house, I think in upstate New York somewhere or Massachusetts. And then other podcasts, I realized I also don't listen to a lot of new food podcasts. And I think in part that's because so much of my life is about food that sometimes it's nice to have a break from it. So one podcast I've been listening to a lot is Dear Sugar Radio.
I listen to that too.
Which I love. I also love Death, Sex, and Money.
Can we go back to Dear Sugar for a minute? Hosted by the amazing Cheryl Strayed.
She's just the best.
Steve Almond. Uh-huh. She is the best. I just wanted to let people know because lots of people love her books, Wild and
that is true.
Tiny Beautiful Things, and maybe don't know about her podcast, but if you have liked her work, I think you'll also like the podcast.
And it's just fun to hear people. When you normally read their words and then you hear them coming from their mouths, it's nice. I like that. But yeah, Death, Sex, and Money is another good one. Anna Sale. My husband makes a podcast about Star Trek called Random Trek, which is quite delightful.
Shall we move on to our
random list? Portion? Yeah, absolutely. So, Joy, you're at the top of the random list. Lay it on me.
During Easter, I had I ordered a locally raised ham, and it was 18 pounds, and I ate it until just recently. And it was amazing. You can do so much stuff with ham. At some point during this epic months-long experience of eating this ham, I read that I think there's like an Irish thing that is like, what is two people and a ham? And that's an eternity. It felt like this ham was in my life for an eternity, but it was really, really good. And I liked making all different kinds of things with it. And that ham was from Country Time. So if you are in the market for a ham, that's a good place to look.
I love that it lasted for whatever that was.
Months.
One of my favorite food items from this year was the Arlott apple, which sounds kind of crazy to, you know, name check an apple, but it is an apple variety that Ben from Three Springs Fruit Farm has started growing in the last few years and is one that hasn't been real popular, but it is so delicious. It's beautiful, first off. It's sort of russety and red, and they don't get too big, and the flavor is really sort of tart and sweet, and the flesh is kind of dense. It's crunchy. It's not like Honey Crisp crunchy, but it's been my favorite apple this year. So
good. I
think
it's perfectly valid to have a favorite apple.
Yeah.
Apples are quite different from one another.
It's true. It's so good.
In May, I had the opportunity to go to France and explore how they make Comté cheese. And predictably, in the process, I fell completely in love with Comté cheese. It's sort of similar to Gruyère, but I think it's even tastier. I think it is a more complex cheese. It's made from raw milk, according to very ancient rules. You know, it's one of those DOP products that has to be made a certain way. It's a terrific melter. It's great in anything with eggs. I highly recommend it. It became one of my favorites this year.
Sounds good.
And I see you have a couple of cheesy things to add.
So first, speaking of cheese, Valley Milk House, which is a local cheese producer, I love this cheese. It's so good. But particularly recently, I had a chance to try the witchgrass and thistle.
That's like the witchgrass is the runny one, right?
It looks like it's sort of a cone-shaped, sort of looks like in the shape of a witch's hat. I think it's got a little ash rub on the outside. It's
delicious.
So good. And the thistle is sort of a camembert style. And it is sharp and creamy. And it is so good with jam.
I love those cheeses too, actually.
That's good.
A shared favorite.
Oh, good. And then my other cheesy thing is simply cottage cheese, which sounds so like old school and boring, but I have been eating cottage cheese this year like crazy, and I love it. And I actually read an article recently about how cottage cheese sales are down because people are so into Greek yogurt these days, and that cottage cheese is actually surprisingly hard to make. And that if we're not careful, it could become a lost food item.
I kind of predict a surge in artisan, local, grass-fed cottage cheese.
I would love to see it because I love cottage cheese.
I feel
cheese.
That the time has come for that. It doesn't exist. It's like an unexploited part of the market.
It's true.
And it really, it falls in line with a lot of food fads. It's low carb. It's
And yeah. I mean, I love that it's sort of a little bit tangy and a little bit salty and a little bit creamy. And granted, I grew up eating cottage cheese. It was one of my family's sort of go-to dairy products.
I don't dislike it, but I never eat it.
Yeah. But it was one of those things that I stopped eating for a long time and then have come back to and thought, why did I ever leave you cottage cheese? and then I think there's just one more. Our final favorite was the Bryant Street Pickery Hoagie Relish. We had them on the show earlier this year.
That stuff is spicy.
Oh my God. It is fiery and delicious.
I love it. Yeah.
So good.
But you know, the two of us love all things pickly. That's for sure. It's true.
Pickly and a little spicy, and we are happy people.
Well, I hope that you guys will come to localmouthful.com and tell us your favorite food things from 2015.
We definitely want to hear.
And if Local Mouthful is one of your favorite food things of 2015, we would just love it if you'd go over to iTunes and review us. We look at that stuff, and it really makes us happy when we see your comments. And even if you don't want to give us a 5-star review, we want the feedback. Tell us what you'd like to see more of or less than. And because one of my unmentioned favorite food things is our listeners who, I believe in the food community and that we're all united in food.
True. And it's been really fun to interact with you guys over Twitter and on Facebook this year. So that's 2016.
My review grubbing. Sorry, guys.
Well, and that's it for this week's installment of Local Mouthful. Our thanks, as always, go out to Dan Call, Joy's husband, for editing the show, to my sister, Raina Rose, for providing the music. It's a family affair around here. And to our friend, Saul Rosenbaum, for designing our beautiful logo. And thank you guys for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. You can also sign up for our newsletter and catch up on all of our episodes and show notes at localmouthful.com. We're also going to be bringing some fun new things to the community in 2016. So if you want to hear about what's going on, make sure you follow us in some way so that we can get you all the fun information. Until next time.
And until next year.
Yes. Happy eating.